Hello, and welcome to Say Yes to NMES. I'm your host, Craig Mateer.
So I think all feeding therapists should definitely get certified in vital stim. When it comes to our families, a lot of our families are coming with such little hope, and they just don't know. They're not in the therapy world. They're just regular, you know, moms and dads. And so I think giving them the hope that there are modalities out there like the vital stim that they can try, because they're going to do everything they can to help their children. And this is something they can ask for.
Today, I'm joined by Jane Moore, an occupational therapist at Beach Kids Therapy Center. She started a comprehensive feeding program to help her kiddos, and she uses vital stim extensively to help them succeed.
Well, thanks for joining me. And why don't we start off by having you tell us who you are and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Jane Moore, and I'm a pediatric occupational therapist. I've been treating for over 25 years. And I've worked with a lot of different age ranges and at different facilities, but my heart is definitely pediatrics. And I currently work at an outpatient pediatric clinic in Southern California. And I absolutely love what I do.
And where did you go to school? How did you get into the business, if you will?
Sure. I went to SUNY Buffalo in New York City, near New York State. I actually went in thinking I wanted to go into business, but that was definitely not it. I met someone my freshman year, a friend, and he was applying for OT program. And I had no idea what that was. And I just researched and I realized this is exactly what I wanted to do. Helping people, making an impact. It was just perfect. And so I applied for the program, which SUNY Buffalo happened to have. And I was so naive then. I didn't even think to apply to other schools. But I think it was just meant to be. I applied, had a great interview with the professors, got in the program. And so I've been doing that ever since. And because I've been doing this for so long, you know, I have a bachelor's degree, not a master's, but I've done tons of classes, certifications, and all of those things along the way. And so I don't have a master's, but I feel like the experience alone over the years has helped me to become who I am. And, you know, there's very few of us who really are able to find a career that is their passion. It is absolutely my purpose in life to be an occupational therapist, helping families, especially children with feeding disorders. It's absolutely my love. And so I'm so grateful that I'm able to do this and be part of our little children's journeys to becoming better.
So if you don't mind, Jane, I know, obviously we know because we're doing it and, you know, provide the vital stim education, but many people don't realize that for younger patients, typically OTs do swallowing and feeding more so than SLPs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it just actually seems a little bit, I don't know, it depends on the state too, because I used to work in New York, and in New York State, in the East Coast, it seems like speech therapists primarily does feeding, but here in California, it seems like the OTs do more of that. And then in all reality, I think it's within the scope of practice for both disciplines, OTs and speech, and if they can work together, that's even better. But it just happens that I'm an occupational therapist. I absolutely love the feeding, and I discovered vital stim 8 years ago. And it's been a great journey. I started out actually, I've worked in a lot of different facilities, as I mentioned. Prior to coming to my current clinic right now, I used to work at a nonprofit. And we saw a lot of children, infants through toddlers, middle, you know, high school, even high school students with feeding issues. And we had a lot of our families come in where their children were on the wait list to get feeding therapy, in particular vital stim therapy, at the local hospitals. And the waits were over 6 to 8 months long. And I'm like, this is not good. These kids are in need of therapy, and there's got to be something we can do. And that really motivated me to become certified, because primarily the vital stim therapists I find are mostly working in the hospital settings, but there's no reason why they can't offer it in outpatient. And so I pushed for that at that facility, and it just didn't work out there. There were a lot of different changes in management and stuff, and so I really felt it was my calling to go create a feeding program that included vital stim, and that brought me to my current clinic. And we do treat infants through high schoolers, and we have a huge feeding program, and we see them as young as a few weeks old, right out of the NICU. So that's primarily my caseload. I see a lot of the infants.
So interesting. So you said you've been VitalSim trained for about 8 years now, is that correct?
That's right.
And you heard about the course at the other facility while you were there, is that also correct?
I heard about it because our families were coming in for feeding therapy, because at that time we didn't have VitalSim at that facility. And they were coming in and they were getting traditional feeding therapy with us. And then, with conversation, getting to know our families, they would let me know that they're waiting for VitalSim at the hospitals. And they're like, "You guys don't do it. I wish you had did it here. It'd be so cool." And so that really is what made me look into it. And then I found the course that was being offered in Dallas. And so I jumped on that. I did that on my own. I went and got certified. I came back so encouraged to use it on our patients, but I needed the clinic to buy into that and then purchase the VitalSim unit. And as I mentioned, they weren't ready for that, I don't think. And so I felt like it was time for me to move on. Great relationships there. They have wonderful therapists. It's just they weren't ready at that time. But my current owner of this pediatric clinic was all for it. She understood the need for feeding therapy and the need for new modalities like the VitalSim. And so I created that feeding program. It's a comprehensive feeding program that offers VitalSim as part of the program. Actually, I was able to also encourage another therapist at our clinic. And so now she's also VitalSim certified. So now there's two of us. And whenever we get the referrals, we're so excited to be able to help these families. So we've had lots of success in the past few, the 8 years that I've been doing this. She just joined recently, but I have a lot of fun stories. It's so rewarding. I love it.
That's fantastic, and we're gonna get in those in just a second. But you told me you said a couple of things that have jogged my, I guess my hit list of points. And one of those, if I had a unlimited amount of money, I would start a TV campaign. That you seem to see them all the time for drugs and pills. And if your doctor hasn't suggested this, ask him about whatever. The latest thing, and I wish I could go on TV and said if your loved one's having trouble swallowing, ask your therapist why they're not doing VitalSim, and just like those families were doing, with you and your clinic, and then the second thing is, and I'm not trying to direct it at your clinic, I'm talking about in clinics in general, but if you have the chance to make some big differences in patients' lives, and your clinic doesn't offer it, and the one across the street does. I mean, it just seems odd that you wouldn't, jump at that opportunity. But that's just me looking. I'm not a clinic owner and all that stuff, but I'm thinking, man, even in the, especially like in the, and I know that's not your population, but in the geriatric area, where those kind of facilities never get good news stories done about them. They're usually on TV for all the
Right, that's so
problems that are
true.
there. Why wouldn't you have this therapy that actually has, family singing your praises and just, willing to, go on TV and say how wonderful you are. It strikes me as odd that a clinic or facility wouldn't, try to take advantage of that. But that's
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think part of it is just the lack of knowledge or the fear or just, they just don't know. And there's also not enough pediatric therapists. I really feel feeding therapy is a very unique niche in occupational therapy. And I can't speak for speech, but not everyone loves feeding. Not everyone loves, the kids spitting up on you and, food drooling all over their face. That doesn't faze me at all. I don't mind at all. Everyone has their specialty. Some specialize in sensory integration or NDT, and some of us specialize in feeding. You have to love what you're doing. I think that's part of it. Finding and encouraging our new grads, teaching them, even in this college level, the master's program, what feeding is all about. And start there, and then create that desire to learn more about it. And then within each department, you know, whether it's a hospital or outpatient or a nonprofit, whatever it might be, educating the therapist of what feeding therapy entails and what vital stim can do. There is research out there. I know it's not a ton of them, but from clinical anecdotal, what we can see, it's extremely successful. And in my mind, as long as you're doing modality that doesn't harm our families, our children, why not give it a try? It's like any modality. It's not going to be perfect for everyone. It won't work for everybody. But if you have a resource, why not try it? So I'm always advocating for that. I'm actually going to be writing an article talking about feeding therapy, and that'll be part of it, about all the new resources out there, research out there, different modalities that are coming about. You know, no matter how long you've been a therapist, you should always be learning, always learn reading research and figuring out all the new things that are out there. And this is one of them. I feel like it doesn't get enough good word out there, and we really need to. We need to be an advocate for vital stim because it does work.
Amen to that. So and so let's go on and talk more about that. Tell me about the patient, the kiddo that we're going to highlight today. And I know we may talk about more than just one, but let's start with the one you had in mind when we agreed to get together.
Yeah. So my little kiddo, when he came to me, he was 3 months old. He was born prematurely. He had seizures and hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy and also saline aspiration. He was in NICU for about 39 days. And during that time, they ended up putting a G-tube in because of the aspiration. And they received vital stim one time at the hospital before they got discharged. The reason for that, I don't know. But, you know, they were discharged to home with the recommendation to receive feeding therapy with NMES. So now it's up to the parents to go and find them, right? And luckily, they were able to come. Well, they actually reached out to one other clinic, and they were scared about the aspiration. They weren't quite sure how to handle it. And, you know, I'm sure the therapist was great. It's maybe they were a little bit newer in this realm. So they reached out to us, and we offer vital stim. And whenever we get inquiries for feeding therapy, if they're babies, they get pushed right to the top of the list. We get them in ASAP because we know the importance of that. And so he came. The one thing I want to say is, like, and it happens with every little babies that come through, you know, the babies, they don't know what's going on, but you can see the anguish and the fear and the anxiety with the parents when they walk in. You just feel it. It's palpable. And so, you know, talking with the parents, doing the evaluation, explaining what the vital stim is and giving them hope. And, you know, you can see right away just the anxiety kind of, disappearing a little bit. Of course, they're still going to be a little bit scared. But anyway, my little guy, I just love him so much. We did vital stim 23 sessions. Exactly. I counted them up. And he progressed so well. He tolerated the vital stim on his neck. We initially started with just taste trials of Express breast milk on the pacifier. Very, very, very little. And so we progressed from there. And then we get better and better. And then we moved on to bottle and side lying. And he kept getting better and better. And the mom and dad were just so thrilled. They were able to follow through with some of the strategies at home. Eventually, he was able to go take thin liquid, no problem. We moved on to purees. He did the follow-up swallow study, and he passed, which was so exciting. Mom sends pictures with the little baby smiling, and mom and dad are so excited. And so then he did fabulous, so we discharged him. By the time he was discharged, he was eating all soft table foods that a kiddo his age would be eating. So, and happy to say that he just turned one a few months ago, and he was able to eat his birthday cake, and it was just wonderful. So extremely wonderful success story. And he's one of the many that we've had in the past, but he just stands out to me because he tolerated so well, and mom and dad were so grateful. And you can see the change in the mom and dad's demeanor. I always say babies can read your energy. And so if the mom and dad are stressed, the babies are stressed, and that impacts the feeding. And so a lot of parent education involved there too. And so they all did great. So now they're living their regular lives and enjoying meal times and going out, not having to worry. It's so rewarding.
That's so fantastic. Let me back up a little bit and say, okay, yeah. So he had HIE and a silent aspiration. Tell me the challenges that has for him and for you as a therapist.
Yeah. So, silent aspiration, that's really tricky because there's no outward signs generally, you know? So we have to really watch for subtle signs like, maybe the lips turning a little bit blue or teary eyes or arching of the back. It's very, very subtle. So we have to be really careful with that. And then also you can use a stethoscope to kind of listen to the chest, you know, to hear how he's doing before you start the feeding, during the feeding, and even after the feeding to see if any kind of changes. And so that I think is even more scarier than an actual, you know, you can see aspiration. So I can see why a lot of therapists are fearful of that. And so we take it very, very slow. Some people might look at our session, they're like, are you even doing any therapy? Because it doesn't seem really fast, but in really reality, it is. We just have to watch our children and kind of read their cues. Luckily, he did actually really well with his diagnosis. You never know seeing him that he had any other issues. He had some difficulties, but as far as motor skills wise, because we also addressed that in our therapy. Because with feeding, you can't just look at the oral motor. You have to look at the posture. You have to look at the trunk control, head control, all of that. So we incorporate all of that into our sessions, and he did really well. As far as the seizures, they were able to control it with medication. So he's one of the lucky little ones that you know he responded really well to all the intervention, and I think he's going to be very successful as he gets older.
And what's HIE in layman's terms?
That's hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy. So, you know, because he had issues during birth, he basically didn't have enough oxygen to the brain. And that could, of course, create, you know, cause cerebral palsy, lots of other issues. But his was luckily mild. And so I feel like maybe down the road as he gets a little bit older and, you know, sometimes as you get older and you meet certain milestones, he might need to come back and do a quick intensive to address some of those skills. But right now he's doing very well.
So if he was premature and he came to you at 3 months, I'm assuming he was not a, he was a tiny little thing.
He was very little.
Yeah. And people, I think, are shocked and question the fact, wait, you can put electrodes on something that tiny. Tell us, I know there's not a lot of real estate to work there. You know, I would say the neck is the real estate. You know, there's not a lot there, but you can still obviously successfully get that done, correct?
Absolutely. You just need a little space. You know, I know for adults, they often use, you know, 4 electrodes. For the babies, you use 2. And it depends on what the issue is, you know, that you're targeting the certain muscles. But because it is so small, generally one placement is sufficient to capture all of those muscles. The main thing for our little ones is, you know, I actually have trivital stim on myself because I always want to know what it feels like when I'm doing something for my kids. I always do it to myself too. And personally, actually, I don't like the feel of the electric stim. Some babies tolerate it better than others. What I find is, and also you don't worry about the number per se, how high frequency you're going. That doesn't matter. It's you're looking at the function of the swallow. Anyway, you can do a lot of different things to help make it a little bit more comfortable. You can add like Coban tape on top of it, which I did for my little one to make it feel really, really nice and snug. You warm up the neck area with you know, a warm washcloth. You just prep the skin so he can tolerate it. Now, some children, they don't like it right away. Here's the other thing I actually didn't mention. Like, this little one was strictly medical oral motor deficit when it comes to feeding. There are some children that come to us that have multiple issues. It could be that they have the G-tube. It could be that they have seizures. It could definitely might have oral motor issues, but they also may have sensory processing issues. And if that's the case, they might be extremely hypersensitive to the touch and sensation. And so for those children, sometimes we start out with just tape on their neck so they can get used to it, or stickers. And we slowly move up from there. And so it depends on the child. But they use vital stim in the NICU. The babies are tiny, tiny. That's very successful. And you can definitely use it on children as little as a few weeks old to a little bit older. I've been able to use it for a lot of little ones, and they've most of the time tolerated extremely well.
Again, I'm not a therapist, but it seems to me the neat thing about vital stim with that is you don't have to explain to this little one, mm-hmm. who you wouldn't be able to explain to, what you want them to do. You can put these electrodes and this machine on there, and it will mm-hmm. get the body to do what you want it to do, and so they can, you know, they can get that practice, and the brain can figure it out, if you will. I just think that's the neat thing, because you know I compare it, you know, sometimes I hear therapists with elderly patients say, oh, well, you know, they don't communicate, or they don't, you know, whatever. So I don't know if I can use, like, well, no, you don't, they're going to communicate. Your 3 month old, like you said, is communicating to you, not through words, but through their actions and what you're looking for and things like that. So you really can do this successfully without necessarily having to have a verbal conversation with, you know, between you and your patient.
Right. But you know, actually I know there was so little, but I always talk to my babies. I kind of let them know, I get permission. I'm like, okay, Miss Jane's going to go and touch your cheeks right now. I'm going to go touch your tongue. Thank you so much for letting me get in your mouth, because, you know, I do believe we want to respect them no matter how little they are. And also because mom and dads are generally in the room, I don't do this without them there, because I want them to know what we're doing. And also just talking out loud what we're doing kind of puts them at ease to know what's happening. And I think the hardest part is the kids, it's actually the taking off the electrode. That is sometimes the most challenging. So I'm really careful about how we take it off. And I feel like our kids also, you know, when you're talking to them, it's that rhythmical pattern of your voice, the therapist is calm, or having a conversation. It puts the children at ease too. And for that, I think that also helps make the session go very, very well. Now, there are going to be some times when we started and the kid is not into it at all. It's an off day. Well, then we don't do it. I really follow the cues of our children. They tell us. They might not be verbally communicating, but you can tell by all the other signs how they're feeling. So I'm really, really cognizant of that and respectful of that. And so I think working together with the little ones and the parents really makes the whole experience so much better.
So obviously very exciting and satisfying. You don't have a crystal ball, but based on your knowledge and experience, what mm-hmm. what might the life of that child and that family been like had they not been able to get successful therapy? What would the feeding routines and challenges and stuff been like for them as they moved, you know, to where they probably weren't eating birthday cake at year one? What might that have been like?
Oh gosh, I can tell you it would have been extremely challenging, because we actually see, luckily, you know, the families that can start right away, you know, wonderful. But then we also have the children that come later on that have had traditional therapy for a long time. They are extremely anxious. Mom and dad are so fearful. They also want, and so, you know, and then the babies are stuck on only puree texture. They're not able to move on to table foods. You have to, you know, the first few months when the babies are born, they have a sucking reflex, right? And so they know to suck on mom's breast or bottle. Once you start introducing purees, now it's a learned skill. The babies have to learn how to use that tongue, how to move the food over to the back molars and chew back there, because you don't chew in the front teeth, you chew in the back. You're teaching all those kids by those exposure. The baby's bringing the toys to their mouth, they're using their tongue, exploring, and things like that. These babies and toddlers who have difficulties with feeding and especially with swallowing never experience that because of the fear, and rightly so, you know, if you don't want them to aspirate. And so they don't get exposed to different textures or the smells. They don't get exposed to using their muscles in their mouth the way they should be. So they are stuck. They're stuck. And so the parents later on come in so anxious. The kids have been, they have lack of sensory input to their mouths. They're a huge mess. And so their quality of life is terrible. They can't go to restaurants. They can't eat what the other kids are eating. The parents are always nervous, and you see it in their face. They don't go on vacations by themselves because they're afraid of leaving their child with somebody else. So it really impacts their life in so many different ways if they weren't able to successfully do the swallow and the therapy and to move on. It's pretty bad. It's very sad, actually. So if we can get them really early on, that's the better route.
That's great. A little behind the scenes. I mean, our youngest child is going to be a junior in college, and called mom the other week and said his appetite's been off, and she's been worried about him eating, for the last 3 weeks. And he's a grown, healthy child. The angst of a parent of a newborn that isn't eating correctly has to be, off the charts.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you know they, and of course you as parents, we just want our kids to eat and eat well and grow and develop. And so when any of that is impacted, it really, there's so much fear and anxiety involved in that. And then, you know, how does that impact their overall development? You know, and also, okay, so let's say the baby did move on, they're able to they swallowed this, pass the swallow study, fantastic. But if you are not progressing with the oral motor skills, then you might, like I said, be stuck on the purees, or you might be stuck on foods that kind of melt in your mouth, you know, like crackers and chips. They might sound crunchy initially, but literally, if you just left it in your mouth, it would disintegrate. You don't have to do anything in your mouth. So then, a lot of our kids that come to therapy when they're older, you'll basically their foods are soft foods, meltable foods, or things that are processed. We are big advocates for our holistic food, whole foods, like really good organic stuff for our children. But also, parents are so afraid that their kids aren't eating, they'll just let them eat whatever their kids are eating. So then they get into this vicious cycle of they eat maybe four things, you know. I don't know what it is, but chicken nugget always seems to be on top of that list.
It's the miracle food.
Right? Oh, I don't know. There's something in there. But then, you know, maybe like goldfish, or it's all just not great food.
Right.
But that's what the kids are eating, and mom and dad just want them to eat, and so that's what they get. And so that's another battle we have to address as they come in. We have to maybe expand their repertoire of foods to make sure it's really good, nutritious food, you know. And so it's an uphill battle. Parents don't, I mean, there's no, it's not their fault. They're just fearful. They just want to do what's best for their kids. And so, you know, if they're going to
Oh,
eat
correct.
chicken nuggets, let them eat it, you know? And
No.
so,
No judgment there. I get it. I'd be doing the exact same thing, but
oh,
you want
yeah.
it. You want your child to be doing different, but you have to sleep at night, and you want to at least know they had something to eat, and so you give them something they will eat, and yeah, it's a vicious non-ending cycle, I think.
It is, but you know, we can get there. You know, I think it's all about just educating our parents, but also letting them know we see you. You guys are wonderful parents and you're doing the best you can. Let us help you with some of the other resources that, you know, has been successful in the past. You know, we know that the foods do impact our children, their behaviors and their development. And so let's help them find substitute foods that look similar to what their kids are eating right now. And when the parents are able to understand the reasoning behind it and they buy into our program, they do very well. Yeah, so it's a team. I always say it takes a village to raise children, It definitely takes a village to help our kids progress in therapy. And one of the things, I'm a big advocate because, you know, I started that feeding program. I feel like, you know, feeding therapy isn't just feeding therapy alone, oral, motor, or sensory. You have to look at nutrition. You have to look at their behavior. You have to look at their emotional state. So we actually work very closely with child psychologists and dietitians. It's, I think, and absolutely is a team effort. And so you have to have everybody involved. You have to treat the whole child, not just their mouth.
Sure. Sure. And I think most parents want to do whatever they can to help their child. So it's not that they don't want to. Again, like you said, they need to be taught, they need to be shown, they need to be exposed to the fact that life doesn't have to be this way, that we can help your child, you know, progress, and it's, you know, it's work and it's going to take time, but we can get there. And obviously yeah. that's what you're doing. And you were telling me before we started recording, there's actually a family that's, potentially moving closer to you to allow you to help their child, correct?
Yes. So this family lives up in San Francisco area, and their child is about 37 months, and they have not been able to find anyone certified for vital stim up there. I guess mom did a whole bunch of research and things like that. And, you know, she found me on the registry and we had a conversation, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you live so far away. And so, you know, that's how I got in touch with you, Craig, right? To see if we can find someone closer. Right. But there's no one up there. And so the mom is going to be moving down to live with her mom in San Diego. And she's going to come a couple of times a week to receive vital stim therapy with me. And so we're going to work on intensives and try to get this kiddo up and ready to go back home. It might be where they may have to come back every once in a while, but you know, I'm happy to help them, but I also want to make sure that, you know, their life doesn't change completely. They have another toddler at home too. So right. I feel like, you know, we need to be advocates to have more therapists become certified so that we can provide therapy, vital stim for children.
Right. In all the communities.
All the communities. Yeah. There's not enough out there, and it's just getting the word out. I'm happy to help this family, but wow, what a huge sacrifice they have to make.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm, to move down. I know, it's crazy.
Now, you said earlier that obviously, like any modality, this modality isn't necessarily for everyone, but to be honest, you've had quite a bit of success, right? I mean, your hit rate would be quite high with vital stim. Is that correct, right?
Yes. And now it's also different types of successes. So my other success, right, was just she was extremely involved. When she came to me, she was 16. She had severe cerebral palsy, autism, aspiration. She was nonverbal. She was wheelchair bound, very, very dependent. What vital stim did for her was for her to tolerate saliva, manage her saliva secretion so she didn't choke when she was sleeping. And so we did that, and she was able to control it, and that improved her quality of life. So yes, there's different ways of improving your quality of life. It depends on the child and the diagnoses and their state, their all of it, you know. That mom was extremely grateful that she was able to get vital stim for her daughter, because a lot of people gave up on her, and she was able to, yeah. So mom can go to sleep knowing her daughter wasn't going to aspirate.
Yeah. And that success, however you want to define success, that is success for that mom. I am sure.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure.
Yeah.
So you've said all along here, but I always ask this question, like, what's your overarching feeling about vital stim and the use, and what would you tell families out there? What would you tell therapists? And I know you've kind of said it, so we'll just kind of summarize it here at the end, but what would you tell those people about vital stim that are maybe wondering about it for themselves as a therapist, or wondering about it for their family member or their loved one?
So as far as it, you know, if I'm talking to a therapist, I'd say absolutely go and do research and go and get the certification. It's another modality that you can put in your toolbox of all the other things you've been doing. You can be doing myofascial. You can be doing kinesiology tape for some of the, you know, assisting with the cheek muscles and stuff. But vital stim is also a very, very successful modality that you can be using. And, you know, there's such a big need that, again, I always say, if there's something out there that can help our children, why not try it? It's not going to cause any harm. I would never do anything that would cause harm. But it's successful majority of the time. Yes, it may not work for everyone, but you don't know until you give it a try. So I think all feeding therapists should definitely get certified in vital stim. When it comes to our families, a lot of our families are coming with such little hope, and they just don't know. They're not in the therapy world. They're just regular, you know, moms and dads. And so I think giving them the hope that there are modalities out there like the vital stim that they can try, because they're going to do everything they can to help their children. And this is something they can ask for. So, you know, I think the vital stim, it's definitely a modality that can be used to be helping these children and giving parents a second layer of hope that, yes, there is something out there that could really be helping our children. If anything, just strengthening those muscles. And of course, this isn't the end story. Even after this, they might need to continue with traditional feeding therapy. But this is that extra like push to get them there. And so I say, you know, all those moms and dads wondering what else is out there to help their children with feeding therapy, I would say ask those therapists if they know about vital stim. Go to the registry and find the ones that are certified in your area. Hopefully there'll be more in the future, you know, as we get more word out there. I was just going to say, I am a huge advocate for this because I've seen it work. I've seen other success stories, not just with me, but with other therapists. And it just improves such quality of life in all of our patients, whether they're babies or geriatric population. Why not do it? That's why we're here. We're here to help our families. We're here to help our children and our patients. So I think, you know, we as therapists, if we want to do the best that we can, this is definitely something that they should learn and use.
I am so glad you are out there helping your families and your patients, and I'm so glad you joined me on my podcast. This has been fantastic.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I thank you. I really appreciate you giving me the time to share my story, and I hope that encourages other people to really go out and do it. You can do this. You can help so many more people, and hopefully the parents will feel hope too.
I hope so too. Well, thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Craig. It was such a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for having me on your program.
You bet. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. And remember, if you have an NMES success story you would like to share, contact me at craig@chiaoseminars.com. That's craig@ciaoseminars.com. We'd love to have you on the podcast. Ciao.